Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast with Andy Burcham.
He is a pivotal figure in Auburn University history. Pat Dye served as athletic director during much of his tenure. The Tigers snapped a 9-year losing streak to Alabama, won 4 SEC championships, and brought the Iron Bowl to Jordan-Hare Stadium. These are just a few of the accomplishments of Patrick Fane Dye. Born into a farming family, Dye became an All-American lineman at Georgia. His first college coaching job was with Bear Bryant at Alabama. After head coaching stints at East Carolina and Wyoming, Dye came to Auburn, and the rest is history. Jimmy Rain, with Great Southern Wood and a member of the Auburn University Board of Trustees, was instrumental in a documentary titled Mighty, The Life and Legacy of Pat Dye. Slats Slayton was selected as the director of this documentary. It was debuted in front of a packed house at the Gouge Performing Arts Center on September 2nd. Slayton talks about the making of the Pat Dye documentary in this Talking Tigers podcast. Welcome to the Talking Tigers podcast. Very glad to have with us Slats Slayton today. Slats has been in advertising, marketing for quite some time, and is the director of the brand new documentary about Pat Dye called Mighty. Thanks. Appreciate you joining us today, Slat.
Thank you for having me.
How did all of this come about for you, and how did this documentary about Coach Dye come about?
It all started with Jimmy Rain, and I've worked with Jimmy for, oh goodness, nearly 30 years. I handled his advertising and, you know, the Yellowwood campaign and so forth. And actually, I shot a lot of commercials with Coach Dye over the years. Matter of fact, my very first commercial, I think, was in 1989 that I wrote, and it was the one with the fence across the goal line. People still seem to still talk about it. But when he passed away, Jimmy and Coach Dye were just dear friends, and he called me and said, "I want to talk to you about doing a documentary." And to be honest, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, you know, I guess my creative wheels were turning. I'm thinking, we'll get some game footage and we'll get some stills and, you know, we'll get some music and we'll knock this thing out in about 3 months. And then I was handed a list of about 40 people to interview, and they were all over the country. So, well, 3 months turned into 2 years. It was quite a journey. Anyway, that's how it started. He put a lot into it. And Jimmy, if you don't know this about him, I mean, he's pretty involved in the creative process too. So he was right there with us. Anyway, we went to work and just, like I said, started clicking off the list of everybody to interview. And here we are, finally got it done 2 years later.
I know you've written, you're an author, but is this something you have done, or is this the first for you?
This is the first of some, especially something, you know, of this size. And but I had a lot of, I had a lot of help. And I had to tell you, there's the Norton deal was sort of holding my hand through this process. He has done a lot of documentary work, and he was the director in terms of the camera guy doing the interviews. I scripted it and I kind of storyboarded the whole thing, and I got off to a pretty good start. But I tell you, after a while, you know, you're just covered up in interviews and all this material. And I felt pretty good about how I was putting it together, but I would just finally just sort of hit a brick wall and call Norton. And then towards the end, I mean, we were just really collaborating together side by side. And like I said, Jimmy was sort of looking over our shoulder as well.
How much of the material that you shot, just the interviews of the different folks, how much of that has made it into the finished product?
Not very much, because we would interview people. Like I said, we interviewed close to 40 people. And we tried our best to include everybody that we interviewed. And I think we accomplished that. Probably each person averaged 2 minutes, you know, or a minute. Some were 30 seconds. There's no way to use it all. And of course, a lot of it is just getting somebody comfortable in front of the camera and getting them talking. It's just like we're doing here. You know, you just get them going, and then you pick out the jewels.
All right. I know a lot of folks, a lot of Auburn folks, the family, knew Coach Dye. Maybe they met Coach Dye during his career at Auburn, after his career at Auburn. So give me your impressions of Pat Dye from the perspective of someone that was in charge of the ad campaign for Great Southern Wood. So you had some opportunities to be around Coach Dye. What were your thoughts about Coach Dye?
I did. And first of all, I went to the University of Alabama. That's a strike against me, I guess. But when I got into this business, I was not a huge football fan. I followed it, but I still don't live and breathe it the way a lot of people do, but I sure have an appreciation for it. And Coach Dye was, I think he probably, whenever he saw me, and like I said, I shot him 7 or 8 times, he probably just kind of lumped me in with the camera crew. And I think he'd recognize me. I had a respect for, goodness, turning that football program around, there's no question. But then as I got to reading his books for this project and meeting his family, and that's a whole nother subject, is his family. You're talking about some great people. Anyway, my respect grew and grew. And I tell you something else, Andy, and I'll again have to be careful here with all my Alabama friends, but I have a real, real appreciation for Auburn University. And Auburn does a lot of things right. And the people that I've dealt with, my daughter went to Auburn, and we were tickled about that. But anyway, I have all kind of respect for Coach Dye and the university.
Let me ask just about some of the folks that you talked to. Perhaps that were a surprise to you that were on that list. Here's one for me. When I saw the excerpts, Brett Favre, for example, who played at Southern Miss, NFL great, he's on that list. Some folks probably aren't surprised to see a Fran Tarkenton on that list. They were teammates together at Georgia. So maybe a couple of the other folks that maybe someone that follow Coach Dye may not be aware of someone that was an impacted by Coach Dye or impacted Coach Dye in his life.
The Brett Favre thing, everybody would ask that question. I think the way that happened, his weight trainer at Southern Miss, knew Coach Dye, and this is after Coach Dye's retirement. He just said, hey, I'm going to Crooked Oaks, which is Coach Dye's place in Notasauga. And he said, going for the weekend, why don't you join me? And I think Favre just went with him, and they just hit it off. They hit it off, and he started going back and took his wife. And then I think Bo Jackson had some sort of fundraiser there. I'm sorry, I forgot what that was, but he became a part of that, and it took place at Crooked Oak. So they became just real good friends. Fran Tarkenton, yeah, they were teammates at Georgia, but what people don't realize, they were best of friends. They were in – I think they were in each other's wedding, I know Coach Dye was in Tarkenton's wedding. Interviewing him was, he got real emotional about it. He was fantastic, gave us a lot of time and had, all these great stories. The Vince Dooley story is really interesting. And I guess, people who know about the fact that, Dooley was an Auburn graduate and head coach at Georgia, and vice versa for Dye. He was a Georgia football great and then became coach at Auburn. And then the fact that they were almost competing for the job, the Auburn job at one point, that, all that was kind of interesting. Think about documentary filmmaking is, you think you know who to talk to and you think you know somebody's story. And so you interview them and you get through interviewing and they'll say, hey, have you talked to so-and-so? And then you realize, as a matter of fact, that's how Fran Tarkenton came up. I mean, I kind of knew about that, but after we filmed, I think it was Coach Dye's sister, Jane Snell, she said, have you talked to Tarkenton? And I said, no. And she said, you need to talk to Fran Tarkenton. And so anyway, we got that set up, and that happened all the time. We would find out of somebody else we need to talk to, and the story we set out to tell ends up being completely different because of all these new people that come onto the scene.
Before Coach Dye passed away and before Rod Bramblett passed away, we had Rod and I had Coach Dye in our studio at the Auburn Sports Network for over an hour of just talking with Coach Dye. And he talked extensively about his childhood in Georgia and on the farm and the relationship he had with his father and growing up on the farm and hunting and fishing and all the things that Coach Dye did. It was a fascinating time because we knew a lot of his football stories. We didn't know a lot about his personal stories. growing up. How much of that were you able to delve into growing up there in Georgia and growing up with his brothers and life on the farm, so to speak?
We absolutely covered that. And matter of fact, when we set out to do the documentary, we would tell people this is not a football movie. We covered, you know, childhood. We covered Georgia. We covered, you know, East Carolina, Wyoming. I mean, we all of his career moves, and then we covered his retirement. So, yeah, we definitely dove into his childhood a little bit. And, you know, I like any family, I mean, there was some hard times and some, you know, some tough stories that we had heard. But I think all of that contributed to the man that he became. And to quote Brett Favre, he said, you know, his childhood made him tough. He's a product of all of that. Nancy McDonald was his partner. I actually knew Nancy. She had worked with us on some Yellow Fella commercials because she handled the horses and so forth. But we got to be really good friends on this. And she asked me, she says, "Slats, did you know Pat?" And I said, "Well, I knew him. I was part of the camera crew." I said, "I think he would recognize me, but I can't really say that I knew him." And she says, "Well, I think he would have liked you." And I said, "Nancy, I'm about 100 miles from Pat Dye. We're two totally different people, but I hope I did him proud." And, you know, quite a story, a real Renaissance man. And goodness gracious, yeah, there were so many things to tell about him. And I hope we covered the good stuff.
Yeah, there are so many stories about Coach Dye of his childhood, of his time playing at Georgia, his first job at Alabama, and then his head coaching jobs, of course, at East Carolina and Wyoming, and then coming to Auburn and the impact he made at Auburn. And then, as you mentioned, his retirement and his time back on a farm, which mm-hmm. really shouldn't surprise us. I mean, it had such an impact on him as a child and what he did at Crooked Oaks and the Japanese maples that he became an expert. I mean, it really is a remarkable life. And it's not just a football coach's or football player's life as well.
Like I said, that you set out thinking you go tell a story about a football coach and you end up, you know, all the other parts of his life are equally as impressive. That was certainly the case with us. And, you know, we heard, you know, all kind of, you know, fun stories. And he was real competitive. He had two older brothers and they too were football stars at Georgia. And another thing that contributed to his, you know, I guess his success is he was competitive. He was competitive from, you know, he had these two older brothers. He was always, you know, competing with them and he couldn't stand to lose. And he found out that, you know, that made him tougher and made him and probably made him as successful as he is, as he became.
If you would take us behind the scenes of putting something like this, you mentioned it was a 2-year journey mm-hmm. of putting it together. Just how do you put that together? The different folks, the film crews that you employ, and where did it take you geographically? Where did these interviews take you?
Yeah, a lot of them were you know fairly close by, you know, Georgia, Alabama, and all that. But yeah, we went to Paris, Texas to film, you know, Coach Stallings. We went to Mississippi to film Favre. We went to North Carolina to film Mac Brown. So there was some travel. The process was I was handed a list. I joke, I said I was handed this list and, you know, some pretty impressive names on the list. And, you know, I said I called Bo Jackson and a scary thing happened. He answered the phone. Anyway, I got used to it and lined everybody up, and I would have to call Norton. He had his crew of audio and video people. And, you know, you've seen how that works. They come with a lot of equipment, and we just, you know, just date by date, we had it in the calendar, and it took over a year to get everybody shot. Well, heck, then you wound up with all of this footage. And I mean, I won't get too deep into it, but there's this process of where you just sort of, you watch everybody's interview from start to finish and you mark what we call the hero shots. And then, you know, they're not guaranteed to be in the film, but you distill it down to a workable amount of footage for each person. And then you have to write the script and you start pulling. Anyway, it's a process, but it's a fun one. And thankfully, we weren't up against a real big deadline, and Jimmy gave us the freedom to you know, shoot nice stuff. We shot it, you know, we shot it with the right equipment and, like I said, the right lighting, and, you know, the production quality is I think really pretty good. Now, I'll tell you what's not good is the, you know, we're pulling from 1980 VHS game footage and things like that. But, you know, we just have to chalk that off as, you know, vintage footage. But so anytime we do a flashback and we show a game or something, you know, that's pretty bad low res, you know, footage. But anyway, ended up with pretty good product, I think.
How do you select a narrator?
Barry Corbin actually had done some Yellowwood stuff for us. We won a Yellowwood Award years ago. I forgot what year, but it was in, we won a Western Heritage Museum, the National Cowboy Association, and he was there. Anyway, we got him to do some voice work for us. He immediately was at the top of our list, but we talked to Bo Hopkins, who actually passed away not too long ago, but he was in a lot of 70s movies. If you don't know who Bo Hopkins is, if you saw his picture, you'd say, oh, him. I remember him. He was probably in a lot of Burt Reynolds movies and things like that. Anyway, I talked to him on the phone. They would do phone auditions. Then I, you know, had little audio clips, and we put it in with the footage and listen to it and watch it. Corbin just won hands down, and which is good because we, like I said, we had kind of a relationship with him. We finished the script and we worked through his agent. We flew to Fort Worth. And that's what he lives close to Fort Worth. And he had a studio that he had worked with. And I think he does books on tape and all kind of audio work. And so we were introduced to that guy, and excellent little studio. And we all sat around and, you know, I had my script and, you know, he'd read them and I'd say, I like this, read it like this. You try not to tell him, you know, try not to tell an actor of that scale how to read his part. But for the most part, he did it on his own and he did it beautifully. But anyway, we did it and then brought it back to Alabama.
Slats, how long did it take to edit this down to the final documentary?
We shot for nearly a year before I did any editing other than, like I said, picking the hero cuts. And I would say a year. I'd say a good solid year of editing. We actually were editing a week before the premiere because we thought of something else that we needed to put in there, and it was easy enough. But anyway, and I'm sure if you were to give it back to me today, I would continue to edit on it because, you know, you're always, as Jimmy says, you always want to be polishing that apple, and so we're always wanting to polish it.
From your perspective, then. Talk about the premiere at the Gouge Performing Arts Center before the first home football game.
Oh my goodness. Jimmy selected the, you know, the first game home, you know, game weekend, which I thought was great. And then we realized, oh, this is Labor Day. And we got concerned that we maybe had picked a busy time. We worked with Tigers Unlimited, who, you know, they tied it to fundraising. And they made the tickets general admission, except for, you know, the seats that were reserved for people who had been involved in the film. And we were shocked. It sold out in you know, a few days. That was a real surprise. My family was there, and I think everybody was involved that brought their family. It was quite a night. It's quite a night. It's something I've never experienced. Like I said, I'm in advertising. I'm not in the movie making business. And so we all kind of felt like big shots that night. We had a good time.
I know you've had this question. I've had this question, so I'm going to ask it for you. For those of us that were not fortunate enough to be there for the premiere, how will folks be able to see this? Because I know a ton of folks want to be able to see that this documentary on someone that is incredibly important, not only to Auburn football or Auburn athletics, but Auburn University, this community, the South at this point.
That's the question. You're right. Everybody is asking, and rightfully so. But we put all of our energy into the September 2nd event. It was a success. Everybody's asking. We have had some people who are interested in it. And, you know, I don't want to say yet because I don't know how it's going to shake out. I think it's safe to say it will be, people will have a way to see it, but I don't know the answer this week. Stay tuned is all I know to tell you. It's coming.
The Auburn family, I think, is certainly aware of the impact of Pat Dye as Auburn's football coach, as Auburn's athletic director, moving the game to Jordan-Hare Stadium for the first time ever. For someone kind of from the outside, as you were, then you got pretty well on the inside, I would think, for 2 years putting this together. What do you think Pat Dye's impact is?
He came along at a time when Auburn needed a Pat Dye at that time. That's what's so amazing, you know, that one man, you know, did all that. And you watch the film and you'll find out, you know, there's more to him. He had good business sense, and he was, you know, the expansion of the stadium, and anyway, he sort of put Auburn on the map a little bit more than they had been, I think.
One thing that always struck me about Coach Dye, and I was with him for 3 years doing his pre and post game show on Auburn football. Then I spent a couple of years when he was doing his outdoor show as his host for that show. So I got to see him a little bit more. But one thing that always struck me about Coach Dye is he was much smarter than folks gave him credit for. The man was incredibly smart, intuitive, wise. Did you get that impression as well?
We cover that Barry thing. Everybody sort of, Nancy makes that point. Jimmy makes that point. And as Jimmy points out, he was an academic All-American football player. You know, he was a smart guy. He also read a lot. That's something that everybody talked about, how much the man read. He always had a book with him. But he was, you know, sort of humble enough not to, you know, be the smartest guy in the room. They say the smartest guy is often the quietest guy. And I think he just, he didn't let on to how smart he was. But people would find out once they engaged with him. When my daughter decided to go to Auburn, we live in Montgomery. We were tickled, you know, we were tickled to death that she went to Auburn. She's a football fan, but she's not like all about Auburn football. She is all about Auburn. I'm seeing why, you know, and so I just have a real appreciation for Auburn University. Another impact is the people. You know, Coach Dye's sister, Jane Snell, I grew close with her, grew close with Nancy, Coach Dye's partner. That whole family, they're great people. The ones in Buford, Georgia, he has a nephew that David Snell, that's Jane's son. Anyway, his family and just meeting these people has just been a real gift for me.
Well, I hope that sometime soon we'll all get a chance to see this documentary. It sounds as though it is a great success, and you're to be congratulated along with Jimmy Rain and all the folks that are behind the scenes putting this together. I can't wait to see it myself, and I certainly appreciate you taking time out to be on the Talking Tigers podcast. And we always finish this with a war eagle.
Yeah, you'll get a warrior out of me, war eagle.
For Slats Slayton and the Talking Tigers podcast, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War eagle.